This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Well, we've got less than a week left in 2018, and we thought we'd spend some time looking back at some of the biggest stories of the year. Later in the show, we're going to reflect on the year in music and in food, but we're going to start today with a look back at the year in technology. And to help us with that is WBUR Bostonomics reporter Callum Borchers. Callum, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hi, Tiziana.
Hi there. Hey, listeners, we want to hear from you. What are you thinking about when you think about tech this year? Are you rethinking its value, how it helps us and how it harms us? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. All right, Callum, let's get this out of the way, because one of the big tech stories of 2018 was a bit of a letdown for Boston. Yeah, centers around a company that a few of us, like maybe me, did a lot of their Christmas shopping with this year.
Yeah, I maybe did my share of Amazon Prime shopping this season as well. And of course, Boston was one of the HQ2 finalists. This was the much-hyped search for a place that was going to house some 50,000 jobs. And of course, in the end, Tiziana, nobody got 50,000 jobs. Amazon chose to split its headquarters 25 and 25 between New York and Virginia.
So they didn't come here, and there are some mixed feelings about bringing a company like Amazon, because you get jobs, but you have to give up a lot, too. So what did New York and Virginia give them in terms of perks? And at the end of the day, did they just offer a better deal than we did?
That may have been a big part of it. I mean, between those two locations, New York and Virginia, Amazon got $2.8 billion, with a B, in combined tax incentives. And without getting specific, we heard Boston's Mayor Marty Walsh say that Amazon wouldn't have gotten anything close to that in Massachusetts. And in fact, on this program, we had Somerville Mayor Joe Curtatone say that his city didn't offer any tax breaks. So that clearly was a factor. On the other hand, if they had simply chased the most money, they would have gone to Maryland or New Jersey, which offered even more money.
And they didn't go there either.
That's right.
So now the hope, if Amazon picked us or one of these big investments where a new headquarters comes, is that it's going to spur some investment in infrastructure, sort of new development, housing, transportation. Did this make us miss out on a chance to build up the city?
It possibly did. Boston's development chief, John Barros, said during the selection process that one of his frustrations is that the city of Boston hasn't been able to convince the state legislature to invest more in the T, but he thought that perhaps Boston would have better luck with a massive Amazon jobs package. In other words, something they could go to state lawmakers and say, look, we've got 50,000 workers coming. We need you to invest. But Boston officials have done their best to put a nice shine on missing out on HQ2. In fact, at a news conference in November after the selection was finalized, this is what the Boston Mayor Marty Walsh said.
I don't look at this as a negative. I look at this as an opportunity we went through. Boston doesn't need HQ2 to be successful. We already are.
And, you know, Tiziana, I heard similar sentiments from mayors in other cities as well. Keep in mind that at the beginning of this process, there were some two dozen cities in Massachusetts, many of which that just sort of put in long shot bids for Amazon HQ2, knowing they probably wouldn't get it. And after the fact, when I talked to them, they said, you know, it was still a valuable exercise, even though we didn't end up getting it in the end.
And are there lessons to be learned here for us?
Well, I think one of the big ones is don't wait for some external catalyst to prompt the infrastructure investment that you're looking for. Remember that the last thing that was supposed to compel more spending on public transit was the Olympics, a bid that we eventually abandoned. And so if Massachusetts wants a better MBTA, maybe it should just make the investment and not wait for some other thing to arrive here and force our hand.
All right. Now, before we go on, our callers are calling. So we've got Jacob on the line from Lowell. Jacob, how are you? All right. I think we may have lost Jacob. Well, there he is. Hi, Jacob.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, welcome to Radio Boston. Yes, Jacob, I can. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi. I think the big story of the year was CRISPR, actually, where there's a lot of controversy surrounding the story that came out of China. I think it really forces us to have a conversation about where biotech is going. And I think there's a lot of potential to alleviate, you know, diseases and human suffering through this technology.
Great, Jacob,
so
thanks.
I'm optimistic about it.
So Jacob's on the phone expressing optimism, Callum, around CRISPR, which is the gene editing technology. And of course, there was the big event this year in China where twins were born who had their genes edited. What does that mean for us? And what do you think about how we're going to think about CRISPR in 2019?
Yeah, it certainly forced a hard conversation that was probably coming anyway. But here was a scientist who sort of went rogue, went around the typical conventions of a scientific experiment and was pretty universally condemned. But I do think what you see, and here in Boston, too, which is a CRISPR hub, hub, by the way. We have folks like George Church and Feng Zhang, who are among the leaders in this field. And those two gentlemen, by the way, are kind of split on this. You know, you had George Church, for example, saying that, you know, an attempt to eradicate a disease like HIV, which is what this Chinese scientist was trying to do, could be a worthy cause mm-hmm. for experimenting on people, although that this particular one wasn't conducted right. And, you know, and Zhang took the opposite approach and said, you know what, we need a moratorium on this kind of experimentation. So that's a really hard conversation that's coming.
Yeah. You know, we have so many challenges with new technologies, how we respond to them, regulate them. So let's turn from China back to Massachusetts, because we've got a story that's still unfolding. In the Massachusetts House and Senate, leaders reached a compromise last week on some potential regulations for short-term rentals. Those are the things like what you have on Airbnb. What would that compromise actually do? And what's the latest on the regulations? I know this has been a long time coming.
It has. So I'd say there's two highlights in the compromise bill that was just passed. One would apply the state's 5.7% hotel tax to these short-term rentals like Airbnbs. Cities still have the option to add additional taxes on that if they want, or they could even ban short-term rentals. And then there's also going to be a state registry of short-term rental properties. So I'd say those are the two biggies. Where does it stand? Well, it's sitting on Governor Baker's desk right now, and his deadline to decide whether to sign it or not is this coming Sunday. And if he does sign, the regulations would take effect on July 1st, just in time for the summer rental season.
All right. Now, a lot of that sounds familiar. So this was not the first attempt to regulate short-term rentals. Is that correct?
That's right. We did see the legislature pass a similar bill over the summer, but the governor did decline to sign that one. And the reason was he had two big concerns. So this version that just passed in the last week has addressed those objections. So number one was the governor wanted people who rent their homes to maintain some measure of privacy. So within that registry that I was talking about, it would list only the street names but not the full addresses. So you could, for example, find out like how many properties in your general neighborhood are being used for short-term rentals, but you wouldn't necessarily know that you know, John and Sally down the street are the specific ones doing it. And the governor also didn't want people who rely who rent out their homes only occasionally to have to pay that 5.7% hotel tax. So if you're someone who, you know, just occasionally goes out of town for the weekend and you put up your house, if you do it for less than 14 days out of the year, you're exempt from having to pay the hotel tax.
Okay. Now, we've had cities trying to regulate and the state trying to regulate. In this case, you are talking about statewide regulations.
That's right.
And how is that different? Because Boston passed some regulations that have been controversial, you know, depending on what side of this business you sit on. So how are these things different or the same?
That's right. So Boston took its own action this year, and some of those regulations are going to go into effect on New Year's Day. So they're coming right down the pike. Some are in pause right now because Airbnb has sued the city. But the big one that the city says it is going to enforce is a ban on short-term rentals of investment properties. So the Boston City Council is basically saying, we're fine with people renting out rooms or homes that they actually live in. So that example I gave earlier, you go out of town for the weekend mm-hmm. and you put your home up. Totally fine with that. What the city council wants to crack down on is people who own multiple properties, or maybe it's companies, and they just snap up these investment properties that they don't actually live in. And instead of actually renting them out to people who need full-time housing, they rent them out by the night on a short-term basis like Airbnb. That's what they're trying to crack down on, because there's a sort of a housing shortage in the city. And their city council is worried about those properties not being available to people who need full-time places to live.
So they're trying to manage the rental market.
That's right.
For the everyday person. So this is big business. Short-term rentals have been around a long time. Why is it so hard to get regulations passed here?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that the governments have been slow to act, both the state level and the municipal level. You know, an entire short-term rental economy has been built around one set of rules, or perhaps lack of rules. And now governments are trying to make those changes years later. Airbnb has been operating in Massachusetts for a long time. And so naturally, there's a lot of pushback, both from the companies and from the homeowners who are used to having sort of a side hustle here.
Okay. I'm going to shift gears, no pun intended, to a word that I love, which is scooter, because I think this has been a big story in 2018. I know you've been following it. It's going to be even bigger in 2019. You did a lot of reporting on these electric scooters being deployed in Cambridge and Somerville this last year. Remind us how that all started.
Well, it came by surprise to the city officials, most notably. So all of a sudden in July, a California startup called Bird Rides deployed dozens of these dockless rentable electric scooters without notice in Cambridge and Somerville, which really irritated the mayors in both of those cities. The cities ultimately issued issued cease and desist orders and actually began to confiscate the scooters to get them off the street when Bird didn't initially comply with those orders. Eventually, Bird did take the scooters off the street after about a month.
Okay, so bumpy start. Now it's 5 months later. Where do we stand on them now in Greater Boston? What can we expect in 2019?
Well, I would say tensions have eased a little bit. And, you know, officials in Cambridge, Somerville, and even Boston, which it also said stay out of here, say that they're open to piloting a program with rentable electric scooters this coming spring. But the big holdup, Tiziana, is a state law that requires electric scooters to have blinkers and brake lights. And the scooters right now don't have either one of those.
So I don't even know where you'd fit them on the
machine. That's exactly one of the complaints from the companies is where would we put them? And so without that modification or a change in state law, they're not willing to give out the permits. And so what you have is officials in these cities saying, hey, state legislature, you need to change the law. We'll see if that happens in the next term.
So if it does, is Boston going to see scooters on its streets?
Well, City Councilor Matt O'Malley certainly thinks so. And in fact, one of his former aides is actually Bird's legislative affairs director. And he told me that if Boston is actually the innovation hub that it claims to be, then the city should get on board with these scooters.
I firmly believe that we should be embracing this. Boston is a hub of technology, and particularly as it relates to transportation. We were the first subway system in the United States, so I think it's only fitting that we're having this conversation to discuss micromobility, particularly electric scooters, and ways that we can make it work for all neighborhoods and all citizens of Boston.
And all neighborhoods is really the key phrase there. You know, part of O'Malley's pro-scooter argument is that they could help solve a transportation problem in the neighborhoods of Boston that have poor MBTA service right now.
All right. Now, last story here, and it is a biggie. This was the year that many of us kind of fell in love. I mean, out of love.
Yeah.
With the tech giants, especially in social media. We saw how they trade our personal information, and it seems like no matter how many times they tell us they're committed to improving, we keep ending up dealing with these same issues. So, for example, how many times have folks at Facebook promised to protect our privacy, limit the spread of misinformation? Remind us about them in particular. What are some of the big stories that came out about them and the social media giant world in general this year?
Yeah, well, maybe the biggest one was in the spring when Facebook had to acknowledge that the outside data firm Cambridge Analytica had been able to improperly gather detailed personal info about some 87 million users, most of whom were Americans. That's what led to Mark Zuckerberg's first ever appearance on Capitol Hill. Remember, he had been refusing to go up until this year. Yeah. And then in September, Facebook said hackers had stolen the login codes to another 50 million accounts. So we're now up into over 100 million people affected here. And then just this month, the New York Times reported extensively on Facebook's data sharing practices. And I'd say the big takeaway from that is that Mark Zuckerberg left out a lot of key information in that congressional testimony, Tiziana, when he said that Facebook doesn't sell user data. That might technically be true, but what the Times found was that Facebook essentially barters that information with other technology companies, sharing the user data as a way of generating ad revenue. And this is the old saying, right, that if the product is free, then you are the product. That's what they're saying, right? Facebook is free to use, but the thing that makes you valuable to Facebook is that they can tell other companies about you, and they can target ads to the things that you like.
You know, I'm glad that you mentioned other tech companies because it's been a bumpy year, not just for Facebook, but also Google, Apple, Amazon, Netflix. They've experienced dips in their stock. What is going on? Is this just a blip on the radar? Is there a serious sign of trouble for the tech sector going on here?
You know, there's sort of broad trends, and then there are specific problems in each case. So, for example, the whole stock market is really volatile right now. I mean, you use a company like Facebook. We just talked about some of the problems they have. You know, they're 52-week high. This year was about $219 a share. They're now trading right at about $130 a share. So how much of that is specific to the bad PR year that they have had, mm-hmm. and how much is the market overall? A little bit hard to say. But you could look at another company like Tesla, which has been one of the you know, hot tech darlings for a few years. A lot of people put a lot of faith in Elon Musk that he is going to be the innovative leader to lead that company to profitability. Hasn't happened yet. And of course, his sort of erratic behavior on social media has, I think, shaken people's confidence in him as a leader. And then you look at a company like Apple, for example, which has been profitable for a long time. But I think that some consumers are sort of wondering, you know, what are they willing to pay for devices that are incrementally more fantastic than the last one? You know, I still use an iPhone 7, Tiziana, and it works just fine for me. Are you willing to shell out $1,000 for the latest, you know, iPhone 10?
Right.
And I think, you know, what we've seen so far is that sales on the latest iPhone devices haven't lived up to the company's hopes.
Yeah. All right. Now, Callum, very quickly, privacy, hacking, expenses, fake news, lots going on in social media. I'm very mindful that this has been a year of women. What's the story about women in tech companies, their leadership, their controversies? Just a couple thoughts from you to wrap up.
Well, I think the story of it here in Massachusetts anyway was that, you know, when the Massachusetts Technology Leadership Council announced the individual executive award nominees this year, they were once again, for the third year in a row, all men. So you had this streak of, I think it was 30 straight nominations of all men, with women being completely excluded.
Jeez.
And people kind of scratch their heads and say, what's going on here? And I think the answer, in short, was that there wasn't enough overture, enough solicitation saying we want women to submit their nominations for these awards, because the way it was structured, it rewarded men who raised their hands and said, I'm awesome, I'm doing a great job, and sort of nominating themselves. Yeah. I think that's something that you might see more attention on in the coming year.
All right. That's Callum Borchers, WBUR Bostonomics reporter on the major tech stories of 2018. Callum Borchers, thanks so much for being here on Radio Boston.
Great to be here.
All right. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.